Good morning and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. My name is Larry Kay from Chicago, and I will be the host for the presentation today. And today is Sunday, April 20th, 2025. Let me give you the share ID numbers for Friday, April 18th, and they are as follows. For the 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting, that number is 22,358. That's 22358. And on Friday, the 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting, 22359. That's 22359. This morning, A Vision for You presents Step 12, The Spirit of Service. And our wonderful speaker will present on an assortment of quotes on Step 12 and the spirit and attitude of service, and he's going to share his personal experience, which is vast, and his insights on Step 12, and perhaps some quotes from the Big Book, of course, and other literature, the AA 12 and 12, and As Bill Sees It. So looking forward to that. You know, a spiritual awakening to me is like moving into a different home. Or perhaps, strictly speaking, creating a new home on the same plot of land, you know, where your previous one stood. And the entire process of becoming spiritually awakened is actually a very organic one for me. And that should indicate to anyone that this is not some theoretical, you know, shoot for the stars type of endeavor. It's not nearly as complicated as some would have you believe. And it's very organic. It's this organic impulse to awaken in people, which expresses itself through the impulse to follow spiritual practices and pathways. We're going to hear that this morning. And so why does there appear to be a blockage sometimes to a relationship with power? Well, the Big Book tells us in a variety of ways that selfishness, self-centeredness is at the very root of the very foundation of our troubles. And it shows up in the egoism, in things like resentments and fears, and this creates an obstruction from a union with the sunlight of the spirit. And to use a metaphor to describe the process leading towards a spiritual awakening, I love this one. Perhaps we could say it's like the long process of cooling that takes place to reach the point where water suddenly freezes. You know, and in a similar way, these changes in us may be so gradual that they often feel imperceptible. They may take place unconsciously below the surface, and it's, you know, for some of us, it's only the final stage of the process, what appears to be a sudden moment of awakening. And the bottom line is, we can't force it. When we work these steps, we cultivate conditions that allow flashes of awakening to occur. And the act of surrender can be seen as an active process because, well, it requires conscious decision-making, working the steps, the self-awareness that comes with this. The willingness to face discomfort, even putting the food down, is the willingness to face some discomfort. So there's an active choice, but at the same time, surrender is imbued with the notion of letting go. And this aspect emphasizes acceptance and relinquishing the struggle against, you know, that which cannot be changed. So it invites a sense of peace and trust in the flow of life. So, thus the surrender is a dynamic interplay, I guess, between the active choice to give up control and the passive acceptance of what is. And then we come to truly recognize that God will do for us what we could never do for ourselves. So joining us this morning to share on Step 12 and the Spirit of Service is Jason Kay. Jason is a recovered compulsive overeater from Pennsylvania. He has been dedicated to our 12-step way of life. He's committed to carrying a message of hope to our fellowship, and I love hearing Jason. And so it's with great, you know, much gratitude, appreciation that we welcome Jason Kay to the line this morning. Good morning, Jason. Jason, press star one.
How about now?
There you go.
There
Good
we
morning to
go.
you.
This phone has this extra mute function, and I'm like, sometimes I hit that instead of star one, and then I get all confused. It's easy to do. Thank you so much, Larry. I congratulate you on you did a great job working towards that, but also providing a good, succinct sort of setup message. So very, very much appreciated. I am Jason KP, formerly Jason K. I added a P when I got married to my wife, Rachel, also in program. And I live in Pennsylvania. We have a little baby in the house. He's 8 months old, Mikey. So if he's screeching in the background, he's really finding his voice. So I am a 44-year-old male with a family here in Pennsylvania. To do a quick introduction, I do have 7.5 years of recovery. Today's talk, I'm going to give you a little bit more about my story, like kind of how I came to be in recovery. I'm going to talk about my emotional sobriety, how I went through a lot of ups and downs, and how this shifted. I'm going to talk about the spirit of service as it relates to newcomers, the root of our problem, selfishness, as Larry alluded to. I'm going to go through some quotes on service. I've been kind of making that a project of mine to kind of collect those. And then I'm going to talk about some personal stories of how I bring this spirit of service into my life. And then I wanted to sort of briefly address this concept of self-care. So yeah, I'm going to start with my story. And maybe some few dad jokes. I love dad jokes. I'm officially a dad. So one way I like to start my talks is to say I was born at a young age to my mother, whom I've known all my life. And I know that sounds ridiculous. my other joke is, if I reach just one person gets my message. I think that would be terrible. I hope I can reach many, many people. yes, I think my goal is to reach all of you in some way. So yeah, just a funny turn of phrase there. My thesis statement, my basic sort of idea for this talk is the chief activator of God's presence and power, and the chief way to turn up the dimmer switch on God, to feel close to God, is by serving others, by being helpful, by being useful, by getting out of ourselves, by focusing on others. So that's my thesis statement. I'll say that again for effect. The chief activator of God's presence and power in our lives is to be of service to others, to be helpful to others. So I'm just going to circle back. I came to this fellowship when I was 20 years old, roughly, so maybe 25 years ago, and I came into meetings. I heard a lot of slogans. I didn't really work the steps. I worked a lot of tools. I'd go in and out of the fellowship, and I'd come back more desperate than the last time until the age of 37, when I started coming back with a zeal and a surrender that I hadn't come back so back to it with, and I became willing to cut out some significant categories of food and to really take my abstinence seriously. And about 7.5 years ago, I had a significant, profound, and deep surrender experience where step one came into crystal clear, high definition focus to me and became the central fact of my existence and reality. And it became kind of as real to me as my name and the fact that gravity is a factor that exists in our lives. And from that deep step one spiritual experience, which happened shortly after Vision for You convention, where I was so inspired and saw that recovery was possible, I sprung into the next 7.5 years of recovered abstinence, which leads us to today. I love talking about step one. I do have a podcast on Vision for You special editions. About step one. It's not the topic today, but it's the fuel and the fire and the basis and the foundation from which everything follows. In terms of my emotional sobriety, though, I would say over the past 7.5 years, I've had ups and downs. And what I had within my emotional sobriety, although I was always trying to be of service and always sponsoring people, never really going with any significant gaps in sponsoring, maybe a couple days a week or two until I could find somebody. I was trying to be of service. I had a very roller coaster type of sobriety with lows and highs, I realized that I had a very strong obsession with self-management. From a very young age, I wanted to be a high achiever. I wanted to meditate for hours like the yogis that I would read about in books. I once heard as a teenager that Arthur Ashe hit 500 tennis balls before breakfast. I said, wow, I'm going to shoot 500 hockey pucks before breakfast. So I go out to my shed and I throw down a piece of plywood and, you know, and start shooting. And, you know, 40 or 50 in, I'm like, wow, I did not know what I signed up for. And I quit and I feel down about myself. So I've always had this intense desire to manage and manipulate my moods. And I think it was something for me that was so deep and so enduring that it just became like it wasn't so obvious to me. It was slightly subconscious. I would even take this into more recently doing cold plunges because I wanted to shock my nervous system into a state of high functioning. It came with the overuse, potentially bordering on abuse of caffeine, which I'm off of completely now. It came into studying different breathing techniques so that I could, you know, change my consciousness, change my mind. It was like somewhat of an obsession to me. And I think it was hard for me to recognize, like on page 60 to 63 of the big book, it talks about step three, and it talks about this focus to arrange life to suit ourselves and this delusion that we could wrest satisfaction if only we managed well. The sort of context of that or the implication or impression that I get from that is it's about arranging other people, arranging the lights, the scenery, the externals. My biggest obsession was fixing myself, trying to manage my moods, trying to, I'd worship a god of productivity when I was feeling inspired and energetic. You know, I'd be getting stuff done. I would desperately want to keep that, prolong it, spend more time in it. When I would go into a tired or lower or somewhat depressed state of mind, I would want to, I would hate myself. I'd want to overcome that, and I'd feel this incredible judgment in that. And there was this perfectionistic mind state behind all of this, and being incredibly hard on myself for years and years and years doing 10 steps. People would say, you're so hard on yourself. And I just couldn't seem to get out of being hard on myself. And this would result into, like, you know, I'd be, you know, saying, I'm not going to take a nap today. I'm going to stay focused. And then I'd have this desire to take a nap. And then I'd be like, oh, man, I wish that wasn't there. And maybe I'll go take a walk. Or maybe I'll use some caffeine. Or what if I set a timer? But none of that stuff has ever really worked. Or maybe Rachel can wake me up after a certain period of time. And then I'd just eventually be like, well, you know, screw it. I can't do it. And I'd be taking a nap. And it spew these volcanoes of self-centered fear and self-management, how to control myself and manage my moods and manage myself. And I think I used 10 steps as a way to sort of, you know, change my mood, to try to feel better and to manage myself. Not necessarily my understanding of 10 steps now is we are working from a place of love and service and trying to be helpful to others. We get knocked off of that beam somehow through pride, fear, selfishness, resentments. We say, I need help to get back on that beam. Let me do a 10-step. We discuss the pride, fear, whatever knocked us off the beam. We're back to baseline service of others, focusing on others. So what I did is about a couple months ago, I started to make a part of my morning reflection an intentional desire to bring God in and to get off of this teeter-totter and this roller coaster of self-management, and just trying to just ask God and to overcome this. And so I pulled up a little sticky note sort of thing on my phone, and I just kind of labeled it to get off the teeter-totter. And I started saying some sort of like superficial mantras, you know, can I give myself some forgiveness? Can I whatever, you know, can I accept myself just as I am. They didn't have much depth for me. And somehow through that reflection, I started to get this clarity about the intensity of my self-management, my desire to control myself and to control my moods. And for some reason within that container and that space of opening up, letting God in, reflecting, day after day, I started to see the answer to this was to be of service to others. And I don't know why the thought of this particular quote came to me. What it was, our very lives as ex-problem drinkers depends upon our constant thought of others and how we may meet their needs. And I kind of asked two follow-up questions, and they are, really? And, like, actually? And those two questions for me was, what would it look like if I sought to live this, the constant thought of others and how we can meet their needs, and in fact do it with such an intensity that my life depends upon it? So I started to see that instead of focusing on, well, whether I feel tired, whether I feel maybe sick or down, or whether I feel super inspired, productive, energetic, my focus is to be of service, to be helpful, to be useful to others. And Bill uses a lot of different words for this: service, helpful, useful. The St. Francis prayer, can I be an instrument and a channel for God's peace, a conduit? So bringing God's power in, submitting, surrendering to God, God's will. Now I'm an agent for God to be of service. Somehow this particular thought crystallized. This is the answer to step off of the teeter-totter. Doesn't matter whether I'm feeling up or down, how am I to be of service to others? And there's a fundamental way that this has shifted my relationship to character defects. There's a quote in the big book around the sex inventory on the fourth step. And the quote is this: if sex is very troublesome, we throw ourselves the harder into helping others. We think of their needs and work for them. This takes us out of ourselves. It quiets the imperious urge when to yield would mean heartache. For me, I substituted, if self-management, self-judgment, my being hard on myself, my perfectionism, if all of these things are very troublesome for me, which they were, the sex thing isn't a big issue for me. It's just minor, right? It doesn't bother me. But the self-management, so if I reword that quote, if self-management, self-judgment, you know, self-monitoring is very troublesome for me, Jason, I throw myself the harder into helping others. I think of their needs and work for them. This takes us out of ourselves. It quiets the imperious urge when to yield would mean heartache. So for me, the way to overcome my character defects is to serve others, which again, for me, back to my thesis statement, is the chief activator of God's power in my life. And when God's power is strong in my life, those character defects wither in the sunlight of that spirit. They don't have room to grow in that consciousness, in that enlightened, awakened spirit. Those character defects can't function. So instead of, when I head on attack, I'm gonna fight for, you know, for me, more productivity and, you know, getting to work on time and waking up on time, you know, those types of things get worse. They're focused around self-centered fear. You know, my caffeine use would increase, my naps would increase, my self-hatred would increase. However, when I turn to focus on other people, the sunlight of the spirit, you know, fills my spirit. The dimmer switch from God goes up. I tend to feel, wow, I feel God close to me. And any of those character defects, they just seem to fall away. So this was the antidote. This was the solution to my problem in terms of this roller coaster of sobriety, the ups and downs. And what's happened over the past couple months is a sort of a deepening of a spiritual awakening, a deepening of a spiritual experience. And I'm not experiencing those deep depressions or high highs because my focus entirely always, as best I can, is to be of service, to be helpful to others. So that's where this talk came from. Now, if you're a newcomer and you're listening to this, you might be thinking, well, whoa, this is great, Jason. This is step 12 stuff. You're focusing on others. Yes, working through all the steps, getting right with God, doing a four-step inventory, having a spiritual awakening puts us on a different footing, which allows us to go out there and help others. But what about this question? How much time and program do you have before you start thinking about helping others? So, yeah, what do you think? Let's just think about this for yourself. How much time you need in program to start helping others? So I'm going to read you a few quotes. I'm going to give you the answer. Spoiler alert, it's kind of a rhetorical question. So from the AA 12 and 12, it says, now what about the 12th step, the wonderful energy it releases and the eager action by which it carries our message to the next suffering alcoholic, and which finally translates the 12 steps into action upon all our affairs, is a payoff, the magnificent reality of Alcoholics Anonymous. Even the newest newcomer finds undreamed of rewards as he tries to help his brother alcoholic, the one who is even blinder than he. This is indeed the kind of giving that actually demands nothing. He does not expect his brother sufferer to pay him or even to love him. And then he discovers by that divine paradox of this kind of giving, he has found his own reward, whether his brother has received anything or not. Wow. We talk about promises in the big book, promises in this literature. How about this? Wow. It releases this wonderful energy through eager action. There's a magnificent reality. This is the kind of giving that demands nothing. So what I did is I took these particular quotes, I put them down in a document, and I study these every day. I read these every day. And I used to be a guy who meditates 10 to 12 minutes a day. I used to think meditation's not a strong point. However, I really refocused my meditation lately. And I'm getting a little sidebar here. I refocus my meditation on this fundamental intention. God, help me to be of service, to be helpful, to be useful today. Okay? Over and over and over again. I'm now meditating for 30 minutes a day, every day. It's really been a profound transformation in my relationship to meditation. But now you're asking, how soon do I help? The newest of newcomers can find this reward. So if you have 7 days and someone has one, maybe you encourage that person, hey, I'm at 7 days. And I just imagine, right, me, if I call somebody up and they're, oh, I just have 7 days. Wow, I have 7.5 years. That person might feel really intimidated. That person might feel like, I can't possibly think of 7.5 years of recovered abstinence. I don't even know. Like, they can't. It just blows their mind, right? Maybe they feel intimidated. But somebody who calls them up and say, I have 30 days. Wow, you're so much like me, and you have 30 days, and you're working this program, and maybe the 7-day person has, you know, on step 3 or 4, and maybe the 30-day person is on step 9 and working steps 10 and 11. You know, I think that person, the newcomer, can probably relate to the 30-day person better, and that 30-day person can be a help to the 7-day person. So just something to think about. Page 129 of the big book says, even if he displays a certain amount of, it's 129 or 119, I didn't write it down. It's in the family afterwards. Even if he displays a certain amount of neglect and irresponsibility towards the family, it is well to let him go as far as he likes in helping other alcoholics. During those first days of convalescence, this will do more to ensure his sobriety than anything else. During those first days of convalescence, this will do more to ensure sobriety than anything else. That's my repetition. That's not in the big book. So first days of convalescence, right? If you read books, there's an entire list of AA, a conference-approved literature, and there's histories of the fellowship and histories. One I really like is Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, conference-approved literature. And studying the history helps me understand that the people back in the day worked quickly, and quickly meant something different than even I think we work it in, some people work it in a vision for you. People would sober up. They'd have people in the fellowship come in pairs usually. And if you were really new in sobriety, they'd pair you up with somebody who had more sobriety. But people would come to these 12-step calls with, you know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks of abstinence and recovery, and they tell their story. You'd give that person 24 hours to make a decision. You come back and say, do you want to go through with this process? And if they said yes, they're doing a 4-step, they're banging it out, they're working on amends, they're launching into this vigorous course of action. So again, early on, helping others. So if you're a newcomer here, I guess I just want to say this message is for you. don't think that this message is for the person who's officially, quote unquote, on step 12. And again, Larry alluded to this. I think it's a great quote. Sometimes I learn by contrast. So service, 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 helpful to others, being useful to others. But why? Why is that the antidote for us? Partly because of this quote. The average alcoholic is self-centered in the extreme. Selfishness and self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our problem. Alcoholics are an extreme case of self-will run riot, though we usually don't think so. Above everything, we must be rid of this. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of selfishness. We must, or it kills us. Very strong words. We must, or it kills us. Does that seem important? Yes, it does in my mind. And so working through these steps, I had this sort of impression. Sorry, lost that thought right here. Selfishness and self-centeredness, that is the root of our troubles. There's another quote that says, we deepen our spiritual life through self-sacrifice and work for others. Some part of me in my early 20s, I was fascinated with spirituality and enlightenment. I thought, the spiritual life would be, sitting in the cave, meditating in bliss. For me, what I understand, my spirituality, the way it works for me, is very practical. Self-sacrifice and work for others. I did also want to talk about a couple prayers that we have. I didn't notice some things in these prayers that sort of came sort of crystal clear after I started this reflection. So in the third step prayer, I'll just read it here and then I'll kind of give my commentary. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self. Why? That I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties. Again, why? That victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of your power, your love, your way of life. Again, why? I used to think about a spiritual awakening to relieve my own suffering, to give me this happiness that I long for. This is really a selfish, a very limited point of view. Why do we ask God to relieve us of the bondage of self, our character defects, the things that hold us down, that keep us mired in self-pity? And again, remember mine was a lot of self-management, self-centered thinking, right? I wouldn't go out there and steal money or, have affairs or, do those types of character defects. I'm not huge with like gossip. Mine was bondage of self for me, self-management, self-centered thinking, controlling myself, managing myself. Why? So I can better do God's will. God's will is to be of service, to help others, to be, one way I think of it is to be God's hands, eyes, ears, mouth in the world. So we're taking away these difficulties. Why? So we can bear witness, so we can testify to others, so we can bring this message to others that we can help, right? We're helping people. Again, in the seventh step prayer, my creator, I'm now willing you should have all of me, good and bad. Remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Usefulness. I used to live a life of happiness. How can I get what I want? How can I like focus on my feelings? How can I feel good? How can I, have the job I want, the girlfriend I want, the life I want? No. A spiritual life for me, being useful. Being useful is so much more profound and fulfilling and deep than any other search for happiness I have ever experienced in my life. And again, this particular phrase, remove every single defect of character that stands in the way of my usefulness to my fellows. Is so profound for me. I use that almost that little snippet consistently in my prayer, consistently after my 12 step, 10 steps, sorry. So yeah, I'm going to go into some quotes and I'm going to talk about some of these quotes and then I'm going to talk about some of these spiritual maxims in my day-to-day experience with some very concrete, hopefully very relatable examples. And I'm not sure how this is going to come out. This was the part of the talk I was a little bit more worried about because I'm like, ah, do I just want to read quotes? And then, of course, I had some perfection about, I'll tie each quote to a specific story, and that didn't work. So I'm just gonna give it my best here. I also sort of suggest, if this talk inspires you, if you want to follow sort of some of these directions, if you want to sort of commit and embrace and this action of service, it is a really wonderful, interesting literature study to comb through sections of the Big Book to find some of these quotes and write them down and reflect on them. So the first one I have is, faith alone is insufficient to be vital. Faith must be accompanied by self-sacrifice and unselfish constructive actions. So vital, when we think about taking vital signs, for faith to actually be life-giving, to be real, we're going to pick up measurements on that, these EKG machines, right? We're taking our vital signs, self-sacrifice, unselfish constructive actions. Faith isn't just about something in my heart. I carry it into the world. I help, constructive actions. I build systems that help people. My wife and I, we have rental houses. We help people. We're of service. We build relationships. We try to find underprivileged people and maybe give them a chance where other people might not give them a chance. We rent to veterans and people who are immigrants and people who are survivors of domestic abuse. Those are our three rentals right now. We also have another quote here. I can show people precisely how we have recovered. We have recovered and been given the power to help others. I don't subscribe to this idea that we're powerless over people, places, and things. Like, we're given power to go out in the world and to be a light for God, to do good works. Like, we have the power to do good works, to help people, to be that light in the world. This for me, like, I'm a little weird like this. I like picking people up off the side of the road. There's a guy walking on the side of the road. I saw his car broken down. I saw him walking, pulled over. Hey, buddy, where do you need to go? Let's go get some gas. Let's circle back. Let me drop you off by your car. I met a really interesting person who told me his life story, how he had a mission, how he was, he wrote a book. Very, very interesting. This is for me. I'm recovered. I've been given the power to help others. This also comes through in my sponsorship, right? I meet people that are struggling. They are where I was years ago, and I get to give them that power. Can I stay close to him and perform his work well, right? So what gives me the power to really forget myself, the power to set myself aside and focus on helping God's kids? Staying close to him, staying close to him through prayer, communion, communication, obviously my morning routines, my meditation, my prayer, my 10 steps. I love this. There is action and more action. Faith without works is dead. To be helpful is our only aim. I take a lot of 10 steps. I don't go to a lot of meetings necessarily. You don't hear me on the line. I love to work one-on-one with people, and I love to do 10 steps. A lot of times when people talk in their 10 steps, I ask, what action might you take to rectify the situation, to make an amends? So action and more actions. Faith without works is dead. We take actions. Why? To be helpful. Helpful is our only aim. So I consistently offer this to people. And for me, acceptance and action go hand in hand. If I deeply, fully, 100% accept from the inside, I'm a true compulsive eater. What's indicated is a course of rigorous action, action after more action, right? So acceptance and action go hand in hand. I don't like that saying, I'm a human being, right? Like, because every single day, action after action after action needs to be taken to live our lives, for one, right? But also to be in recovery. And this book says time and time again, but there is more action, 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 action. Faith without works is dead. Again, to be vital, faith is accompanied with self-sacrifice and constructive work with others. Ask in your morning meditation what you can do for the compulsive overeater that still suffers, right? This is on my list of things to reflect about. Bill likes to throw curveballs sometimes. He put this at the end of our 164 pages, not in the part about, we wake up in the morning and, we think about the day ahead, but this is another good one. When I think about this, I start to think about, what are my sponsees doing right now? Do some of them need a little bit more support? Do they need more time? Do they need a come to Jesus talk, a kick in the butt? Maybe I do get on that meeting so I can get that list of newcomers and start making some phone calls. How can I help this these people? In order to save himself, he must carry his message to another alcoholic. And that's what the big book described this particular word. I love hearing the same concept worded 100 different ways. It really gets it into my soul and like deep down inside of me. This is when Bill is in Akron and he's pacing with a bar close by and a telephone close by. In order to save himself, he must carry his message to another alcoholic. Another quote, it says, you know what it is to give of yourself so that others may survive and be given life. So we are giving of ourselves so that others can find the solution that we found. And again, this is very profound. This is this amazing sense of giving. I love this. I think this is in step three, page 60 to 63. We became more and more interested in what we could contribute to life. I used to be a taker. I had an ex-girlfriend look at me and she'd be like, you're an energy suck. You just take, take, take. And I didn't know what to say. I couldn't see it at the time. But the opposite of that for me in recovery, how can I contribute to life? Contribute to life, be a giver, not a taker. And for me, my spirituality is very practical, right? I go to a gym to work out in the mornings. Our gym isn't good about cleaning the bathrooms. I go into that gym sometimes carrying paper towels and toilet paper. I say sometimes, I guess I did it technically once. I go into that gym and I wash my hands and I wipe my hands on a paper towel and I notice the sink is dirty and I clean that sink out. I notice the garbage is overflowing. I use that paper towel to pick up some garbage and push it into the garbage can. I try to contribute wherever I go to make things better than I left them. Even going to that gym, I'm working out. Working out in some sense seems like a selfish action. I'm taking care of myself and my body. It doesn't live like that for me in reality. I go to that gym to make connections. I go there to help other people. Sometimes I don't want to work out. I don't want to lift weights. But I go there and I try to put on a friendly face. I go there and I try to be helpful to others. I try to find the members that maybe are struggling and I give them a little lift. I try to find the people who maybe are a little more socially awkward and I go talk to them. And I send this implicit message. You belong here, right? You're here. I see you. I know your name. I learn so many people's names at that gym. I hear their name and I start thinking about it over and over again and I start to find mnemonics. You know, Carrie, when I met Carrie, she was Carrie Ann. She was carrying Ann, and the grammar doesn't work, kettlebell, you know, and I remember that person's name, and I become a friendly face. Another quote we have here, Father, this is in the family afterward, I believe. Father feels he has struck something better than gold. For a time, he may try to hug the new treasure to himself. He may not see at once that he has barely scratched a limitless load, which will pay dividends only if he minds it for the rest of his life and insists on giving away the entire product, right? So I can sit in meditation and I can touch profound moments of peace and stillness and quietness. So what? If that was just that, that would be inconsequential. So Jason had, some minutes and some moments of deep sense of peace and a connection to his higher power. That's when I think about the seven-step prayer. God, make me an instrument and a channel of your peace. Can I bring that peace and that energy and that spirit into my daily life, through all environments to work? Believe it or not, I said some certain character defects I don't struggle with. I do struggle with road rage. I get pretty angry sometimes. And when I started to really focus on this mantra all day, every day, how can I be of service? How can I be useful to others? I'll see somebody come up on my rear end. They're tailgating me. How can I be of service to this person? How can I be helpful to this person? They sure seem in a hurry. I pull off the side of the road when I next can. I let them pass, and I get back on my way. That's on a good day. I'm not saying I'm not capable of saying a few choice words. Practical experience shows, this is the next quote, nothing so much will ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when all their activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Again, when I'm face-to-face, ear-to-ear over the phone with another compulsive eater, when they're telling their story of their powerlessness, hopelessness, their attempts to get sober, those are profound spiritual moments for me that I feel closer to God then than even in those morning meditations. There, I'm feeling like my spiritual experience, my life experience is dramatically useful to that person. And by the way, I do notice the time. I'm going to finish in about 4 to 5 minutes. Our real purpose, sorry, and let me just say that, like talking to somebody, I almost feel this sense of like being at one with that person, like they are me, I am them, there's no boundary, there's no distinction, like they could be telling my story. It's so fascinating. And for me, God, it's not like, oh, I believe in God. It's not like I can name it fully. But it's like I feel the nearness of my creator and the inner sense of peace and security that God is there. And a little emotion comes with this, that I'm safe and protected, that I'm close to God. When I feel it almost most when I'm helping others in this particular way. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. Bill says this when he's talking about making amends. And he says, remember, this is our real purpose. We're not trying to get something we want. We're not trying to get forgiveness. We're trying to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. We're trying to take this attitude of helpfulness. I had a previous job at a school. There's another quote here, too, that I think would help with that. I had a job at a school previously that was a really difficult school. I was put in charge of that school as like a head teacher. If I would have been focused on selfish desires, like why don't I have an office? Why are these kids out of control? How come we don't have more support? I would have burnt out in a month. This attitude, how can we be of service? How can we be helpful? And since I'm running out of time, I'm gonna skip down to another quote I have here. It says, we no longer seek fame and honor in order to be praised. When, by devoted service to family, friends, business, or community, we attract widespread affection and are sometimes singled out for posts of greater responsibility and trust, we try to be humbly grateful and exert ourselves even more in the spirit of love and service. I didn't ask for my last two job promotions. I went from a teacher to a head teacher to a clinical director. My salary went from let's say it almost doubled, right? It almost doubled within the past couple of years here, maybe 2 years. I came to work with an attitude to be of service. I remember approaching my boss once and saying, hey, so-and-so's had this complaint. Are you aware of this? And she says, I'm aware of this. I'm aware of that complaint. I said, oh, okay. I just wanted you to know in case you had a fix for it. And she didn't have a fix for it. She said, no, I actually talked to that person. And I said to this boss, I said, why? I don't understand why there's this rift between administration and teachers. Like, I see you're here to help us. Like, I'm here to help you. I don't know if I said that exactly. And we left. But that was the mentality that I looked at my job with. How do we solve problems? How do we help? It's not about me, my own concerns, demands. That boss singled me out. You know, I applied for a job and it was, you know, it was going to be a decrease because I wanted to do a different type of work. And she said, no, we're going to give you an increase in salary and an increase in responsibility. So I went to that job and worked there until somebody else grabbed me and said, Jason, we want you to come to our company and help here. So that's just really, really powerful. Man, I have so many more quotes, but I'm going to really quickly wrap it up. I'm going to let people kind of have the maybe the itch to wonder what my entire quote list is. But I'm just going to talk about a few more examples, practically speaking, because I love a practical spirituality. Grocery shopping brings a lot of anxiety for me. I start to go through the grocery store sometimes with a get the heck out of my way. Don't I'm going places. I know what I want. I shop with the system. I know where everything is. I'm not dawdling. And what I notice when I'm doing that is I stop. How can I be of service to this person? How can I be kind to this person, right? These people are shopping. Maybe they need some consideration. I had a party recently, literally a party, loud dance music. Where would you be of service in this environment, Jason? This is ridiculous, right? Being of service at a party. I started to think, who are those people that are standing in the back against the wall? Maybe they're feeling anxious about being at a party. I have this gift. I can go up to anybody and talk to them. I just, what's your name? How you doing? I like that suit you're wearing. Just anything. So I started looking for those people, you know. I went up to some people, hey, are you sticking on the wall here because you get kind of anxious in these crowds? They're like, no. They weren't, but right, it was a good conversation starting. I play ice hockey twice a week. Again, this seems on the face of it just a fun, self-serving thing. I go to hockey, how can I be of service, right? What team do you need me to be on, white or dark, right? I try to pick up hockey pucks. I try to set the net up. I try to set the clock up. I sit there and think, while I'm playing hockey, how can I be of service and be helpful? One thing I do sometimes playing hockey is I go like a bat out of heck, and I've heard people say, like, you're going too hard, you're going to hurt people, right? I get out of control because I try so hard. So I start to remember, we're all friends here. I play like a friendly, not super competitive league. How can I make sure I'm safe? That means I don't go 100 miles an hour and put myself in a situation where, oh, I accidentally knock somebody into the boards. I literally think about, I'm playing defense. My job is to help my goalie, right? Not leave him high and dry. I kind of stink at that one because I also think I'm trying to help score goals. So I'm down at the down at the other end. The last thing I'm going to say, you know, there's this question about self-care. Are we going to lose ourselves if we think about focusing on others? And I just want to give my perspective on this. Asking whether I should take care of myself or help others, to me, is like asking whether I should inhale or exhale, right? They're both vitally important. They both happen on extremely natural cycles without much thought. And I feel like my life moves, in these cycles very normally. You know, if I'm doing a fifth step with somebody on the phone, hey, I'll call you back in 5 minutes. I need to run to the bathroom. I'm not thinking I need self-care right now. Even as I'm falling asleep, maybe I say I do take a nap. I fall asleep thinking, how can I be of service to others? How can I be helpful to others? And I'm literally taking a nap. This type of thing for me, like I don't ever state out loud or think in my head, I need self-care, right? Like, I am connected to sort of an intuitive voice. I can kind of hear the whispers of my intuition saying, you better slow down. Oh, it looks like you're really overwhelmed. You know, it's okay to, you know, one of my favorite little coping mechanisms is like a comedy radio station. Listen to some stand-up comedy for 10 minutes. Take some deep breaths. But I don't ever have to be like, it's not a struggle for me. I'm just worried that some people hear this message and they think they're going to lose themselves or not be able to honor their own needs. I don't have much experience in that. I feel like maybe women are in our culture are sort of taught more to suppress their own needs. So that's just something I think of as like an open question, but I offer kind of how it works for me. And yeah, Larry, I was shooting for 45 minutes. It looks like I hit 50. We're going to sort of stop it there and open it for questions.
Oh, great, Jason. Thank you so much for an inspiring, very relatable, practical presentation of hope. It's so appreciated. And so I want to give everyone the share ID for Jason's presentation this morning. That number is 22,361. That's 22361. Okay, so we're going to transition to the question and answer portion of the program this morning. But before we do, just a reminder to stick around after the Q&A so you can get Jason KP's contact information. So with all that said, if you have a question for Jason, questions only, please press star one and give me your first name and last initial. Who has a question for Jason?
Denise M. in North Carolina.
Adrian
and Elena. I got Denise, Adrian, and Elena. Who else? And again, star one. Great opportunity for a question for Jason. I'm sorry, say it again.
Joe in Connecticut.
Hi, Joe. Thank you. Gotcha. Who else? Yeah, that's a good start there, and then we can open it up with more time. So we have Denise, Adrian, Elena, and oh, let's start off with Denise. Good morning, Denise.
Good morning. Thank you. Thank you, Jason. You really inspired me around how to be of service. And my question, in all ways that I hadn't even really thought, so thank you so much. My question is this. I'm newly recovered, just a couple months, and I'm at step 12, but I don't know when, how do I know, or how did you know when you felt you were ready to sponsor? Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. I'm glad you're inspired. Can you unmute yourself really quick? I just want to ask you the question, have you had a spiritual awakening as a result of the steps?
Yes.
So you're ready. So the qualification right in step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of the steps, we carried this message. So that's what I ask people. It's not some arbitrary, the book doesn't say once you've hit 7 days, 7 months, 7 years, you know, the book says having had the spiritual awakening. And I ask that people question to people a lot. And when people say yes, unequivocally, I'm really excited when they say, oh, maybe I'd like to explore it deeper. Maybe they're having something of like an educational variety. Very early on, my sponsor said, what's going to really fire your recovery is sponsorship, helping others. I think if you're doubtful about sponsorship, just go help people, right? Like call newcomers, talk to newcomers. Maybe they'll ask you to sponsor. When they ask you to sponsor, say thank you for asking. Let me think about it and pray about it. Ask for an intuitive thought or decision whether you sponsor this person or not. But typically, my short answer: have you had a spiritual awakening? Yes. What are you waiting for? Jump out, go do it. And if you want to discuss earlier, discuss more, feel free to call me when I leave my number.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Denise. Okay, next up we have Adrian, followed by Elena. Here's my sophomoric humor. Yo, Adrian, good morning to you.
Thank you. Good morning. Adrian N. in Florida. My question is, I love doing service. Myself and inside, and it makes me feel more spiritual. But I get to a certain point of doing service and feeling like I have no time for myself. I'm neglecting myself. I'm taking care of others over me. And then I start to get resentful and angry. And sometimes I even like lash out verbally.
Yeah.
You know, so any suggestions?
Yeah. So anytime you have a resentment, you want to bring that into your inventory. I don't think there's like a clear answer to this as much as like when you're feeling angry and resentful and lashing out, it sounds like your conscience or your inner intuition is saying I've overextended myself and how would God want you to be? So I would look into this in a 10-step format, and I would ask you to start praying and asking for an intuitive thought or decision about how you should proceed, and maybe you start to get some intuitive thoughts. This is how it works for me. Wow, I've been giving too much. Maybe I got a certain zeal of service, and I've done this to such an extent that I'm harming myself, and I don't know if God would want that, or at least I'm doubtful and I'm questioning, right? So I'm feeling this fear, right? I've overextended myself, this resentment. I've given and given and given. I'm not getting enough sleep. I haven't been eating my meals on, like, I've been helping so much that I'm eating lunch at 3 in the afternoon, which I do periodically. I try to look for that inner voice of guidance to find some self-correction. You know, I think Mother Teresa still slept at night and still took bathroom breaks and still ate meals, right? We can't just always give, because then we're just gonna, we wouldn't sustain. But the best way to find this is your inner prayer life, and it's going to guide you more than I could guide you in any sort of formulistic way to see where your life can come back into balance and harmony with your higher power. I hope that helps.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Adrian. Okay, next up with the question is Elena, followed by Joe. Good morning, Elena.
Good morning, Larry. Good morning, Jason. Jason, thank you so much for the beautiful presentation. I wrote so much from what you said and got so much. Something you said about people who are recovered a day or 7 days, can you speak more about how they can be of service to other compulsive overeaters, people who maybe just got into the program? And besides sharing their experience, I imagine sharing the experience with compulsive overeater is tremendously important. But other than that, how can they be of service to other compulsive overeaters? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. So I think the key points in that, one is Bill doesn't elaborate necessarily on the newest of newcomers helping and in the first days of convalescence, you know, helping others, right? I think pointing back to the history of people working through the steps extremely quickly, that those people that Bill might referring to might have already done a preliminary fourth step and started making amends and cleaning up the past and continuing to take inventory. Even if they're 7, 10, 14 days in, they might have worked through the steps in a very, very quick fashion. So the real answer is, I don't know. I could imagine if you're 7 days abstinent and still working through the steps, you can call a newcomer and say, hey, I'm new like you. I'm scared out of my mind, right? Like, maybe just talking, maybe just relating. What do you think this means in the meeting when they say this? Like, I don't understand. Let's. Do you have a sponsor? How'd you get your sponsor, right? I don't know fully, but I think the intention, how can I be of service and help others get out of myself? For me, sometimes I ask that question, and it's not take another 10 step, put myself out for service, get another sponsee. The thing that comes up is call my mom, right? My mom loves it when I call her. It's take the baby so Rachel can nap, you know? Or if I want to take a nap today, go to Rachel and say, I want a nap, but I want to give you first dibs on it, right? She covers overnights, right? She lets me sleep. She's in my mind, a candidate for sainthood. She covers all the nights and lets me sleep. So, you know, service mentality isn't for me just about the 12 steps. But again, if you're new, being of service, maybe that means calling your mom. Maybe it means calling another newcomer. I know for me, when I was recovering and I found people, hey, you have 2 months of sobriety too. You have 2 months of abstinence. Like, I felt like we were in the same litter. Like, I felt like they were truly my brothers and sisters. When I called somebody with 10 years of abstinence, I was intimidated. I was like, I'm not sure I can really relate to this person. I'm going to call this person if I need help and they can give me advice, but I can't, I'm intimidated, right? So that, there's just a few of my thoughts. I'm not sure, you know, I'm not sure the merit of them, but I appreciate the question.
Thanks, Elena. Okay, before we go to Joe, just keep in mind we have time for more questions. And Jason doesn't bite. The last I checked, he's a really compassionate soul. So think about questions you may have. Now, with that, Joe, it's your turn. Good morning.
Hello there. I'm Joe in Connecticut, and so appreciative, and so appreciate the talk today and how studious it was, and give me ideas of how to plan out a talk and that. So thank you very much. And it was littered with really good nuggets, and I so appreciate it. And what jumped out to me, and I know the other one of the other people who questioned hit on the subject as well, is being of service. And I know you mentioned women naturally suppress with our needs to others, and I'm like, oh boy, don't we just? And my question is, it's hard to balance that because pre-program, I grew up as basically a slave. I was the youngest of eight children and had to do for others continually, and it was very much looked to my three sisters and four brothers and to parent, et cetera. We were always, if you do more, you're loved more. That was the thing. So that it's that horrible, not a service, more you have to, or more you need to in order to get something.
Yeah, let me take a stab at it. I really, really appreciate your kind words and your gratitude for the talk. And are you okay if I take a stab at your question of how to balance it?
Yes, please.
It's a great question. And I've been talking about this topic with people, and I think I'd do it a disservice if I tried to speak for women's experience and the culture that, the messages women get. I think this is an ongoing question. I think of it as an open question because for me, I didn't necessarily get a lot of those messages of like, my needs don't matter, or, I think for me as a guy, I would get this like, take what you want, take charge, we're more like be aggressive, or maybe some of the messages that I got. I like this metaphor of inhaling and exhaling, right? We don't have to ask ourselves consciously, do I need to inhale right now or do I need to exhale right now? For me, there's a certain flow. I don't know how I got there. It just seems to be there. I think when you start to identify like some of these long-standing patterns within yourself, like, oh, if I give, this person's going to love me. That is something to take into your inventory, right? Like, there's a fear that this is going to continue on, right? This is a dishonesty of like, I'm giving in a transactional way. Okay, God, steer me away from this and show me your will and remove these defects of character and listen to what God is saying to you. And then I would talk to people, try to find people who also kind of experience this struggle, and try to talk to them about it. But I think that's probably as best as I can answer that question at the moment.
Thanks for the question, Joe. Okay, so if you have a question for Jason, please press star first name, last initial. Who's got more questions?
Aurora from Massachusetts.
Was it Ella?
Aurora. Aurora.
Aurora. Okay, gotcha, Aurora. Thank you. Who else? Again, star one.
Joe H. from Idaho.
Hey, Joe. Good morning. Anybody else?
Marisa.
Lynn, I got. And was that Teresa? Did I hear that right?
Marisa.
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 Marisa. Okay. And anybody else? Aurora, Joe, Lynn, Marisa. Well, we'll go with that, and I'm going to throw myself at the end of that, Jason, and just so you could think about it, is what have you learned about service from your lovely wife, Rachel?
That's
Okay, so let's go with I'll give you time on that one.
Sure.
Aurora, you're up first, though, and followed by Joe. Good morning, Aurora.
Good morning, and thank you, Jason, for an awesome and amazing qualification today, and thank you for all the examples that you gave us. Yeah, I'm a woman, okay, and I'm hearing you know the things that you're saying, and I you know the people, the women who have spoken, I really relate to. And one thing that I've really noticed, especially in my 10 steps, is that I'm selfish always. Like everything is about me. You know, I want you to be happy, so I'll be happy. You know, I give you this gift because I want to feel like a hero. You know, and so I was just wondering, because I've been thinking about this a lot, like how can I actually be unselfish? And I'm not even sure if I really actually can, but I was thinking of the word I can be selfless, which is not thinking about me first or something. I just would love to hear what you have to say about that.
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, sometimes we think of the world in black and white. We say, you know, fear can't exist without faith. But I've had experiences where there's fear and faith, right? I had fear starting this process. What if I fail? But I had faith that it would work, and those kind of coexisted in me. I also jumped out of a plane once with a tandem, you know, in a tandem skydive, and the guy had 4,400 jumps, and I really had faith in him. He knew what he was doing. I had faith in the equipment, but boy, was I scared, right? It was pretty nerve-wracking. And I think in the same way, we can go be of service, right? I'm of service all day long, and I go to work, and I'll forget myself in service, and then I'll go, I'll come to this place of pride and be like, Rachel, I did this today, and I did that today, and I intervened in this crisis, and I smoothed over this relationship with some parents, and I developed a behavior plan, and I rolled out a training. I did that all in one day, right? It's like, prideful much, right? Like I'm bragging, right? And it's not so much was I of service, but that service mentality, you know, is there, and then the pride comes in. Even this morning, I did a 10-step with Rachel, and Rachel, I'm afraid this talk isn't going to go well. I'm going to be stuttering and stammering. My words are going to, you know, and it's not going to be organized. And, you know, I just want people to see me as, like, competent and capable and intellectual and a articulate speaker. And it's like, okay, Jason, this is a talk on being of service, right? She's like, and we're kind of laughing about this is very, like, metacognitive, standing back and being like, oh, you're getting really anxious and fearful, and the self-management came in. I'm like, oh, I want to meditate longer, and I want to, you know, turn off this YouTube video that's really interesting that I'm watching so I can listen to the big book chapter, you know. And she's like, oh, you're self-managing now, right? And it's like, what's your talk about? Oh, yeah, it's about being of service. So I think we're always going to have mixed intentions, and it's about shifting the dial. I notice when I'm selfishly attached to certain things, I get very focused on the outcome. So, right, and I have a hero complex too. I want to ride in on the, you know, like on the horse and save the day and be the hero. And I want that recognition and feedback. And so I have to take a deep breath, set that aside. How can I truly be helpful here? And when I try to be the hero and it doesn't work out, I'll get angry because it's like, I came in, look, I gave you the right thing to save the day, and you didn't take my help, so screw you. You know, I think we all struggle with some of those mixed motives, and I think our inventory process is a really, really great thing to be like, you know, I started trying to be of service, you know, like, and then I got caught up in self, right, and then I, you know, like there's an ebb and flow to it, right? Like, and then I realized I was being selfish. Then I started to focus more on helping. And for me, focus on helping and serving as an intention isn't as strong as sometimes like taking some actions, right? Like I can get lost in my own head. Like I tend to be an overthinker. So it's like, no, go wash the dishes. Like go take out the recycling. Like do something. That shifts me. So I hope that's helpful. I felt like it was a little bit rambling, but I hope that's helpful.
Thanks, Aurora. Okay, next up is Joe, followed by Lynn. Hey, Joe, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Jason, for your share. It was very inspiring. And, you know, I sit and I listen to these sometimes, and I can struggle because it seems, and maybe I'm misreading this, but sometimes it seems like everybody just kind of bumps along with this spirit of service and like, you know, I don't know. Sometimes I struggle with that because I feel like, you know, I don't run around all day long with rainbows and butterflies, you know, flying out of me. And so in those moments, do you have those moments? And I guess my question of what I mean by do you have those moments are, do you have those moments that you're not really, you know, feeling the service mentality? And are there any, you know, obviously we have step 10, but what do you use? What tools do you use in those situations to kind of help pull you back into that service mentality?
Yeah. Mostly, thank you, Joe. Mostly I yell and scream and tantrum and act like a grumpy person, and Rachel just kind of stays away from me is what happens. No, just kidding. Joe, by the way, Joe is a sponsee of mine and someone who's I consider almost like a co-sponsee. And Joe could have easily given this talk because he lives a life of service in so many ways. And Joe, I hear your question, right? It's like I didn't mean to paint a picture of, you know, shiny, happy people holding hands. I have sort of a depressive personality. Like I don't have like a pretty high set point. And so, yeah, I woke up, what was it, yesterday or the day before? I was just cranky and everything looked kind of negative. And my coping mechanism, one of the things I do use is I tend to embrace that energy in a fun way, and I tend to over exaggerate it. So I'll look at Rachel and say, what do you want to fight or something? And you know, we'll have I'll just be like, you know, I'll just kind of exaggerate, you know, like that's it, Rachel, like I can't open this cap. I'm going back to bed. You know, I use humor a lot. There's significant chunks of days and hours where, you know, I'm not living this, right? I'm cranky in my head. I might not even feel willing to do a 10 step. I'm just struggling. I'm mentally, physically exhausted. And I think like painting a picture that like, yeah, it's all sunshine and rainbows, you know, it does a disservice to our newcomers who their worlds feel like they're crashing in on them, the people who are in despair. I've had deep, deep moments of despair and hopelessness and, you know, hurt in recovery. Yes, I go to 10 steps. Yes, I have more subtle character defects that are, you know, like distraction and avoidance. Distraction and avoidance are interesting for me because, you know, I can get into like watching YouTube videos on like true crime or cults and like, you know, not really be thinking of service or, you know, paying it lip service. Oh, how do I, like, just almost like a mantra. How can I be of service to others? And, you know, just click that next video. So yeah, I have those down times. I have those times where I'm cranky. I'm literally not capable of being of service because I'm absolutely exhausted. And, you know, this past week I had weaned off of caffeine, so my energy was way low, right? So I'm not running to work, you know, running around being of service. I think I took a sick day or a half a day sick day. So yeah, very, very good question. And yeah, I want to be authentic and be real that this doesn't always it doesn't always look pretty. Life itself doesn't always look pretty. Thanks for the question.
Thanks, Joe. Okay, next up is Lynn, followed by Marisa. Lynn, good morning.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Jason. Lynn S., Toronto here. Jason, this talk was exactly what I needed because I'm going to be helping somebody right after the call. And what I'm struggling with, or, you know, I'm listening to you and things pop into my head. How do I know, Jason, if it's me taking over and trying to do my thing with this person, or if it's really being helpful or the way God would want me to do it? Like I get I get so caught up between the two, not being able to decide what to say or what to do. If you have any pointers, that would be helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for the question. You know, for me, yeah, sometimes like I'll notice, oh, I'm willing to help this person because, yeah, they're a boss or somebody of a higher status, and I want to sort of schmooze with them. You know, I was talking at an event recently to the mayor of the city that I work in, and you know, part of me was like, oh wow, I'm talking to the mayor, right? So I think it's just natural that a lot of those things can kind of like you can kind of question those things. Subtle fear that there's mixed motives and selfish motives, and you're not quite sure. So I would take that into a quick 10-step inventory. I would, you know, either do that with somebody or just pray about it. God, help me to set aside these particular maybe selfish motives and how to better know your will, and see what intuitive thoughts come up in that silence. And then in general, how I tend to sort of think about, am I more in God's will or am I more in like my selfish will, is I kind of use my feelings as like a barometer. So if I'm, you know, if I'm typically trying to go through my life in a place of like love and service and helpfulness to others and usefulness to others, you know, and I'm really feeling that, and then I get kind of kicked off of that beam, you know, maybe it's, you know, somebody's tailgating me and I can't quite find that forgiveness and I am getting angry, or there's a confluence of events, or, you know, I just get tired and cranky and jaded and, you know, annoyed. I want to ask God to remove those defects of character and come back. But those defects of character tend to bring feelings like fear and angst and anger and unsettledness. And those feelings tend to lead towards bad habits and character defects. Whereas if I'm clearly engaged in being of service, I tend to feel more at ease and more peace. And it's not just about those feelings. Those feelings are truly indicators. And it's not that I can't be of service and feel, you know, cranky or tired or whatever. But as a general indicator, I try to look those feelings and try to look internally towards my intuition and my conscience to see what feels right, what would God have me be or do. Yeah, I hope that helps.
Thanks, Lynn. Appreciate that. And Marisa, it's your turn. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you both. My question is about, as you sponsor, I have gone through the program a couple times, and many of the sponsors had different ideals going through the book and the steps. Some have gone very slowly, some have gone very quickly. Jason, what is your take on a slower approach and a faster approach? And if you favor the faster approach, is there a way to change the people's ideal of that so that people can get through quickly and start sponsoring? Thank you for your answer.
Yeah, thank you so much. I think it's a really good question. And again, I think like reading some of those history books is really helpful. I see differences in sponsorship and some of the rules people make up for sponsorship that aren't in the big book tend to disturb me. So I've started to scale down my approach to sponsorship as a very almost like true to the big book. Like, so I say, we're going to read the big book. If the big book says pray it, we pray it. If it says we write it, we write it. If it says we go out and make amends, we go out and make amends. You know, if it says we look at this, we consider, we look and we consider. I try not to give instructions outside of the big book. So in the chapter Working with Others, it talks about how to approach somebody who's new. It talks about to dwell on the hopelessness of the, you know, of the problem. It says to leave them with this book. It says to tell them to read this book in the interim and reapproach them and say, do you want to go through with this process? Sometimes I think of the book, big book, as like a cookbook. You know, you put all these ingredients together, you do all these things, you get a result. you know, follow the instructions, get a result. Just by reading the book doesn't mean you're going to get the result. You actually have to do the actions. And in that chapter, working with others, it says, you know, leave the book in the interim, have the person read the book, go back to them and see if they actually want to go through with the process. And then you work them through the process. If I have to advocate one way, I typically advocate towards quicker. But I also, as a special educator, I think of, always think of meeting a student where they are. So I'm not a good person to talk about how do I sponsor, because I have some very general rules and I try to meet people where they are. I've had people who couldn't seem to get through a couple days and they're jumping out of their skin and they're trying to have their husband, you know, lock them in their rooms and put dressers in front of their doors. And I try to work extremely fast with those people. For me, it's almost like a race against time. Like you're trying to have a spiritual awakening before you have a mental blank spot and a mental twist and eat an alcoholic food. And the disease progresses deeper and quicker or faster or longer. Like it's a progressive disease. So people are towards the end of that and they're so desperate. They need to, in my mind, move extremely quickly. Sometimes people can find a solid, stable abstinence and work through the steps. But typically I do like a chapter, read a chapter, discuss a chapter, read a chapter, discuss a chapter, day after day. So one day, one chapter, one day, the next chapter, which typically gets them writing a fourth step in a couple days, and then give them encouragement during that fourth step. There's never been like a clear, like it takes 12 days, 14 days, you know, 21 days, but it's quicker in my mind. Yeah, I hope that helps. Great question. I really appreciate that question.
Yeah, thanks so much, Marisa. And Jason, let's wrap up with, I'll remind you of this question. So Jason, at your homestead there in Pennsylvania, we refer to it as the KP Giggle Factory, but what have you learned about, what have you learned about service from your partner, Rachel? What are some of the things you've learned along the way?
Thank you. That's a great question. You know, I think Rachel is a very sweet and wonderful person. She has ways of serving that are different than mine. Like she has that maternal instinct and that desire to sort of bond. You know, she loves to take the baby and let him sleep on her chest, and she just feels so close to him. And I'm like, set him down in the crib, and then you can get stuff done. You know, so I think we all serve in different ways. You know, Rachel has her service mentality, and her thoughts about service are a little bit different than mine. I think learning in relationship that, you know, this person's way of being a service is different than mine is helpful. I can get really kind of arrogant and caught up in like my way is the best way. But, you know, Rachel's ways, you know, so for instance, I'm like high productivity, constant motion. And Rachel's like, I just want to sit on the couch sometimes and like spend time together. And that's a way that she can slow me down and be of service. I'm very system oriented, like, you know, what's our system for this? And let's not have to like, you know, renegotiate things. Let's just decide once and keep a system. And I think those systems can benefit her. She works as a therapist. She gives this quality of presence of like being with people. That's a great way for her to be of service. I start being with people and I'm like, well, let's move and do something and solve the problem, right? So I'm a little bit more action oriented. I think ultimately it's just finding the appreciation. You know, Bill talks about tolerance, love and tolerance. So it's an effort in tolerance. I'm probably the harder one to live with. So more tolerance for her on her part. But yes, lots of forgiveness, lots of laughter in our home. And recently the baby's screeching and squealing. But yeah, really great question. It's a really, really fun question to answer.
Thanks so much. And thank you again for just a wonderful presentation this morning. We're so appreciative. I'm going to give the share ID number again for Jason's presentation. That number is 22,361. That's 2-2-3-6-1. And please hang out for just a moment as we wrap up the recorded portion here. We're going to ask Jason for his contact information. And, yeah, feel free to reach out to Jason as well. So with that, I'm going to read from page 164 from our big book in our namesake chapter, A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you.